My name is Eliab. You don't have a clue who I am, do you? I could have been famous. I could have been a legend. I could have been a hero. I could have been that person that moms and dads tell their children stories about at bedtime for generations to come. And instead, I'm a historical footnote. I did know someone famous. I did know someone who became a great hero. And you know the ironic thing about it? He was just an ordinary person. Just a regular guy, just someone like you or me. And yet, at a pivotal, at a crucial time in our nation's history, he stood out. He had the courage to believe God for great things, to face impossible odds, tremendous fears, and change the course of history. You may not know me, but you do know my little brother. His name is David, the greatest king Israel has ever seen. And this is his story. Story of his faith in God and how that gave him courage to do what was humanly impossible for God's glory. The story of how I learned that when we really begin to understand who God is and what he's like, it will give us the courage that we need to do great things for God. Well, the story really begins back with Samuel, like so much in our people's history. Samuel was a great prophet of God who led our nation for years and years with wisdom and courage and justice, a man of great integrity who everyone in the nation respected and held in awe. But there came a day when our people were no longer satisfied to be led by God alone through his prophet. They demanded a king. And so God had Samuel anoint Saul as our first king. Finally, we were like the other nations. Saul started off great, but he quickly went off the rails because of his own selfishness and his ego, his disobedience and rebellion against God. God rejected him, and Saul became a king in name only. And so it was in that time, one day, Samuel the prophet appears at our village, the little insignificant village of Bethlehem. And as he came to the city gates, we were trembling. Friends, when a prophet of God arrives unexpectedly at your village, it's not always good news. And so with great trepidation, he was greeted by the elders of our village, who were relieved to discover that he came in peace. He had come to celebrate a festival. And so he urged everyone to consecrate themselves and get ready for this festival. So preparations were made, and the time for the festival came, and people were gathering together, including my father Jesse and myself and my brothers. And as we came to the festival, Samuel took took my father Jesse and the rest of us aside, and he swore us to secrecy. And he said that God had sent him on a mission, a secret mission, to anoint the future king of Israel. Well, my eyes got as big as saucers because I knew what this meant. I was the firstborn. I was the oldest in our family. I was going to become the next king of Israel. I was having all kinds of thoughts and visions of what this would look like and how I would look on the throne and what my first decree would be. And so we got ready to pass before Samuel the prophet so he could confirm whom God has chosen. And I could tell as Samuel was looking at me that he was impressed. I mean, I'm tall, I'm extremely good looking. I would have been a great king. And so I struck my best kingly pose, my best royal walk, and I passed before Samuel. But as I did, I could see this look of confusion on his face. He was perplexed. He didn't quite understand what was going on. And then, whether it was to himself or to us, I don't really know. But he mentioned these words that have stuck with me for my entire life. He said, "The Lord does not look at things the way people look at things. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Well, I passed before Samuel, and he kind of just shrugged his shoulders and said to my father, Jesse, "He's not the one." I looked at my next oldest brother, Abinadab, and he's just grinning ear to ear because he's the second oldest. And now he's thinking he's going to get to be king. And I'm thinking, no way, you cannot anoint him. Do you know what he did last week? But he passes before Samuel and the same thing. Samuel says, "He's not the one either." Well, my third brother passes before him. And my fourth and my fifth and my sixth and my seventh. He's not the one. Well, Samuel, this is kind of a bust. I mean, you come to anoint the future king of Israel and no one's here that meets the qualifications. And you could tell that he was perturbed too. He wasn't sure what was going on. And finally, Samuel says to my father, Jesse, says, "Is this it? Is this all the sons you've got?" My father said, "Well, pretty much. I mean, there's Jesse, or there's David, but he's out in the field watching the sheep." And Samuel says, "Send for him right now." And so we waited around while the messenger goes out to find David in the fields. And we're waiting and waiting. I don't know how long we waited for. Finally, David shows up and he's all drenched in sweat. And he's dirty from being out in the pasture. And he's out of breath. But the moment Samuel saw him, I have never seen such an old man jump to his feet so fast. And you could tell from the look on his face that the confusion was gone. The mystery had vanished. And Samuel knew that this was the man that God had chosen for him to anoint as the next king of Israel. Samuel took out his ram's horn and he poured the oil on David's head to anoint him as the next king of Israel. Well, we went on with the feast and the celebration. And after that, everyone dispersed back to their homes, back to their lives, back to their activities. Several months later, war broke out between my people and the Philistines. Now, the Philistines had oppressed us for hundreds and hundreds of years. We had been engaged in a great struggle with them ever since General Joshua had led our people into the land to possess. And we had pushed the Philistines out, but never been able to overcome them. And at one time, we would have the upper hand, but every time we seemed to get there, they would overcome us again. They would oppress us. And they were doing so once again. And their troops had moved into our territory. And so Saul had sounded the alarm and sent out the draft for all young men of fighting age to come and join the army of Israel. So me and my next two oldest brothers answered the call. We arrived, attached ourselves to Saul's army. We lined up against the Philistine army, overseeing a valley. The Philistine army in all their strength and splendor arrayed on one side of the valley. Our ragtag army of misfits arrayed on the other side of the valley, prepared for war. And then, just as we were lined up, we noticed that the Philistine ranks began to part. And out of their ranks marched the biggest, strongest, most fierce-looking man I've ever seen in my life. His name was Goliath. He towered head and shoulders above the tallest soldier in her whole army. He was dressed in thick metal armor from his head down to his feet. He was the scariest dude I had ever seen. And as he marched forward, he just had this wicked scowl on his face. Bellowed out for all to hear, "You servants of Saul, send me your champion and we will fight. If he defeats me, we all will become your servants. But if I defeat him, you will become our servants." And he blasphemed the name of the living God of Israel. He hurled insults and threats, taunting us. He was so terrifying. It was all I could do to just keep myself from running away back home. Terror seized our entire army. You could have heard people breathe. No one stepped forward. I have to admit, I lost a lot of respect for our king that day. He was our leader, our king. Where was he? Saul should have been the one to have taken up Goliath's challenge. Saul should have been the one to fight Goliath. Well, where was he? Hiding at the back of the lines in his tent. Well, not just once, but the next day, the Philistine ranks part again, and Goliath strides forward, viewing his venomous threats and blasphemies, taunting our army, ridiculing us. Not a man stepped forward. Day after day, week after week, this went on. And our morale just continued to crumble all around us. Well, after a few weeks, there was a day when my little brother David showed up with a bunch of supplies that my father Jesse had sent to kind of top up the rations we got from the army. Not the greatest food. And as David arrived in camp that day, he arrived at just the moment when Goliath came forward to utter his challenge to the armies of Israel. And as David saw and heard Goliath's challenge, his jaw dropped. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. His face turned red in anger, and he looked around, and I could tell he was just baffled that no one made a move. No one stepped forward to challenge this Philistine pagan. So David began to ask the soldiers around him what was up, and he learned that this had been going on. This wasn't the first time, but it had been going on for days and days and even weeks. And David was just bewildered by this, and he inquired more, and he had found out that Goliath had so destroyed the morale of the army of Israel that King Saul had, in desperation, promised great wealth. He had promised to exempt from all future taxes. And he had even promised the hand of his own daughter in marriage to the man who killed Goliath. Well, I could see David's eyes get big and the wheels start turning in his head. And as I saw that, I got angry. I said, "What are you doing here, you little runt? You don't know anything about battle or warfare. You want to be a hero? You want to be the big shot? Why don't you go back home? Take care of those few sheep that you're in charge of." I was angry with him because I felt threatened. I felt embarrassed. I mean, Saul wasn't the only one who had refused to take up Goliath's challenge. No one in our army had taken up the challenge. I hadn't taken up the challenge. And I sure didn't want to be showed up, humiliated by my little brother. But word quickly leaked back to King Saul that there was someone in the camp who was willing to stand up and face Goliath. And so King Saul called for David to his tent. And I followed at a distance because I wanted to know what was going on. And I came right up to the tent. And that's a great thing about tents, right? There's no secret in a tent. You can hear everything. And so I could hear David just trying to convince Saul that he was not only willing, but that he would defeat Goliath. Saul wasn't exactly brimming with confidence. His response was, "Are you crazy? You're barely old enough to shave. This guy is a grizzled veteran of untold battles and wars. He dwarfs you in size. I mean, look at the size of his arms. They're bigger than your legs. His legs are bigger than tree trunks. He will chew you up and spit you out." David was unfazed. He says, "Oh, King Saul, don't worry. Back home, I take care of my father's sheep. And there are all kinds of predators that are always trying to attack the flock and steal one from the flock, whether they be bears or lions. And I go after them, King. And I find them and I kill them. I've killed bears. I've killed lions. This Goliath is nothing more to me. Just watch, King. You watch and see what God will do." When I was listening to David, I couldn't believe it. I mean, he should have been scared spitless of Goliath like the rest of us were. Should have been quaking in his sandals. And yet, he was just brimming with courage and confidence. It was like David could see things that the rest of us couldn't see. And that gave him the strength and the courage to face his fears, to overcome them, and to stand up against circumstances that seemed completely overwhelming. Well, Saul didn't have much of a choice. He certainly wasn't going to fight Goliath. No one else in the army was stepping forward to fight him. So finally, he relented. He allowed David to fight Goliath. But he wanted to increase his odds, and so he insisted that David be outfitted in his own royal armor. And so they strapped the armor onto David. David slowly, clumsily made his way out of the tent in all this armor. And I saw him and he looked like a fish out of water. He almost fell over under the weight of this armor. I mean, he'd never worn a piece of armor in his life. And he was staggering. He could hardly move his arms or his legs. Finally, in frustration, he just tore it off and he says, "I can't do this. I'm not used to this." He threw down Saul's sword and instead he ran down to a stream and he reached down and he picked up 5 smooth stones and he put them into his pouch. And then he started down the hill towards the bottom of the valley. And as I watched him go, I thought, "Oh, he's so young. He's so vulnerable. He's got no experience in battle." Less than an hour ago, I was trying to shame and humiliate him before the rest of the army. And now as I watched him go, tears welled in my eye as I watched my little brother walk to his death. And I realized that without some kind of divine intervention, he was not walking out of this battle alive. Well, David continued to make his way down to the valley floor. And as he did, the Philistine ranks parted again and out marched Goliath, glaring, spewing out venomous curses, threatening all kinds of things. But I could tell that he was, in a sense, happy that finally, someone in our ranks had rose to the challenge. Yet when Goliath got closer and he could see who exactly it was, he was not impressed. Sees some boy, no armor, no weapons, coming to fight him, a great champion. This was not going to be any challenge. This was going to be cakewalk. He was not a happy camper. Goliath bellows out, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? I will feed your flesh to the birds of the sky and the wild animals. And he just continued to hurl insults and threats at David. David was completely unmoved, just kept walking towards Goliath. Then David pulled up and he stopped. Goliath didn't quite know what was going on, so all of a sudden he stopped. And then in a voice that could be heard throughout the valley as it echoed, David said, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, who you have defied. This day he will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head." We're watching this, we're hearing this, we're going, "David, that is the stupidest thing you could have ever said. You are poking an angry bear. You could have had a swift, painless death. Now he is going to make you suffer, and you are going to plead with him to end your life." And Goliath got so angry. I thought he was going to blow a gasket. He just let out this huge, blood-curdling rage of a young... And he marches forward. And David all of a sudden begins to run fast as a rabbit. And he's zigging this way and he's zagging that way. And Goliath, he can't get a bead on him to throw his spear at him. David is running this way, running that way. All of a sudden David comes to a complete stop. And faster than you can even imagine, reaches into his pouch, pulls out one of those stones, puts it into his sling, winds it up and fires it straight at Goliath. And Goliath stops in his tracks as the rock flies and hits him in the head. He lets out a yell and falls face down to the ground. Moments ago, the Philistine armies were cheering in anticipation of a bloodbath. Their whole army went completely quiet. Our whole army went completely quiet. Our mouths dropped in disbelief. We couldn't really comprehend what was going on. You could have heard a pin drop. And then David quickly races over to Goliath's body. He reaches down and pulls out his sword from his sheath. He raises it up and brings it down and cuts Goliath's head off. And from our army arose the most deafening cheer you can imagine. Ah! And we raced down the hill and we're on the Philistines so fast. And they're still in shock of what's happened. They can't believe it. But their shock soon turns to panic. And they flee in 13 directions. And we chased the Philistines that day. And we attacked them all the way to the gates of their city. And it was a great victory for Israel that day because of what David had done. Well, friends, even though David became a great warrior and a great poet and a great king, he was just an ordinary man. Before he fought against Goliath, nobody had ever heard of him. And when he did set off to fight Goliath, nobody thought he'd ever make it out of there alive. But David's story tells us what can happen when even one person has the courage to believe God for who he says he is and has the courage to act on that knowledge. David, friends, was the ultimate underdog, and yet he had learned one crucial lesson, and it's this. God doesn't look at things the way people look at things. When we see weakness, God sees strength. When we see despair, God sees hope. When we see defeat, God sees victory. And by looking at life from this perspective, it gave David the courage to face the fear that Goliath was. Saul and Eliab and the whole rest of the Israelite army could only see a fierce warrior who appeared invincible. And as a result, they cowered in fear and were paralyzed from action. But David saw an opportunity. David saw an opportunity for God to display his power in an awesome way. And this confidence in God gave him the courage to do what seemed impossible from a human perspective. Well, friends, we serve the same God today that David served. He hasn't changed. And he is not only able to do great things through ordinary people, but he loves to do great things through ordinary people, people just like you and me. And knowing this gives us the courage we need to face our fears and our enemies with confidence. So the question is this for us here this morning. Who are the Goliaths in your life? Who are those people or things that are opposed to God and his purposes, that are working against the advancement of God's kingdom, that blaspheme the name of God and resist his will? These might be actual people in your lives. They may be sinful habits. They may be ungodly attitudes. And we need to identify what they are. And then the second question that we need to wrestle with is this. What are we going to do about these Goliaths? Are we going to cower in fear and be bullied into silence and passivity and just sit around like Eliab and the rest of the Israelite army and do nothing and allow the enemies of God to triumph? Or are we going to choose to look at our circumstances through the eyes of faith, to draw courage from the fact that we serve the King of Kings, and to go to battle against all that dares oppose Jesus and his kingdom? Friends, we can't all be famous, but we can all be heroes, ordinary people who God chooses to work through to do extraordinary things. People who have the courage to make great sacrifices, the courage to confront injustice, the courage to grant forgiveness, the courage to give with extravagant generosity, the courage to speak truth to people's lives, the courage to live not just for ourselves, but to live for his honor and his glory. Friends, we're just ordinary people. But through Jesus and the power of his Spirit, we can live extraordinary lives for God's glory and honor. Amen.